This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. We share your news your noon hour with you every weekday.
Could be a news hour.
Yeah. What? Today we're going to talk about a lot of news.
Yeah.
Some good, some bad, but things you need to be aware of in the Mid-Valley. So welcome to this fabulous Willamette Valley Day here in Salem and Kaiser and surrounding areas. So many things on my mind when you read through the news. So many things I'd like to talk about. That I have to steer away from because we try not to be extremely focused on the national the show, because on both sides of this show, a listener gets a good healthy dose of that. And of course, we want to focus on things that are regional, important to our local pocketbooks, our local quality of life, Mid-Valley and Salem and so forth. So that includes things happening at the state capitol. So first topic on my agenda, and hopefully we'll run out of time and I won't get to talk about the Make America Great Again hat that the teenagers were wearing on the Lincoln Memorial.
That's nonstop on that.
I do not want to talk about that, but I really, really do.
I know you do. I can see it.
All right. But closer to home, let's talk about rent control. It's going to be a bill. It's still being negotiated out. The Oregon Home Builders Association's at the table and the desires of course, the legislators is to get some control on escalating rents, especially in the Portland area, right? And what do we do? And we talked about this when we had the Home Builders Association president on, Mike Erdman, CEO, and how sometimes the rent situation is a crisis that was manufactured by the same people who are saying we need to lower the rents. So through regulation.
Okay.
So we talked about that when they were here and they did something with zoning. And it was well-intentioned, but it just doesn't pencil out. And that's the problem.
It caused the problem, yeah.
So like anything else, and it would help if all the legislators would take economics, if they take an economics one course, and supply and demand, and what really affects the cost of goods and services, and what doesn't.
So what is rent control, good or bad?
Very good question. And I will say, because I have been critical of even bringing it up, because this was a bad idea 40 years ago, that it's not the rent control. It's not as bad as the rent control that we saw experimented with in the 60s and the 70s in New York City. And that all resulted in, you know, just capping rents. Actually, you still see it in some areas of the country. Santa Monica, California still has rent control.
Really?
So what you end up with is property owners that won't put any money into the site. Because there's no money coming back out. There's no return from the money that goes in. So the housing becomes dilapidated and it creates and it spirals down to slums.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so why would they remodel? Why would they re-landscape?
There's no incentive.
You know, in a free market, and if you don't have rent control, you might do some of those things and paint it up nicely because you get a higher rent out of it. Or you'll be able to refinance it for more money. But the refinance, again, is going to be tied to how much rent can you get. Anyway, it's not that. So that's the good news. At least at the Capitol, the politicians are looking at things like capping how much an increase can be each year. So you hear proposals between 5% a year or 10% a year. And so there's some negotiations going on there. So
that's good. At least they're talking about it. And percentage cost of living, right? 3%, 5%?
Well, I don't even know if that's going to be included into it. But
if you get a 3% raise, would you consider that a cost of living increase?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just check it.
So each year though, it would be limited. So if you haven't, you know, a place that's $800 a month, if you can find one, right?
Right, right. Good luck with that.
Yeah. And that means if there was a cap set by the legislature, 10%, then that landlord could not raise the rents more than $80 in a 12-month period.
That's a lot though.
Yeah, 10% is pretty hefty.
My lease has been going up about $20 to $40 a year.
It's not bad. It's not bad at all.
Yeah, but it's more than my mortgage now.
Oh.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. So I do have some experience in this, and we saw relatively flat rents in Salem for about 10 years, starting early 2000s, 2003, 2005. And they escalated somewhat, but a two-bedroom apartment was, $600, then it was $650, it was $700, but it didn't really have huge escalations. Now you're looking at big jumps, and I don't know if it's catch-up or entirely just a factor of how much supply there is in the market, because the economy is
good, and demand,
and the jobs are plentiful and so forth. So supply and demand. I'm glad you said that.
Yeah.
So there's a number of tools at political leaders'
disposal.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. What they can do to help this. One is you get rid of legislation or regulation that raises the cost or deters people from building multifamily housing.
Right.
Right? More supply. I mean, and we've seen it in Salem, and I think we're going to see a flattening out of rent prices in Salem.
I don't think they can build them fast enough, though.
There are so many coming on the market right now, and they're all going to have move-in specials, and they're all going to be competing for the same new employees.
Right.
Some people will be moving out of units because there's a brand new unit, and there's move-in specials and so forth. So it's a cyclical thing, and so that supply is definitely going to affect that, and that's going to have a downward trend on rent. So that helps solve it.
Okay. Next question is, supply. If the economy goes down, people move out of the area, more apartments available, rent, will it come down?
Yes, they'd come down.
Okay.
And you'll see, they look at the vacancy, right? So if you have 100 units, how many are vacant at any given time? There'll be some natural turnover as people move, people pass away, people change jobs, whatever. So there'll be 95% is a pretty darn healthy occupancy rate.
Yes, it is.
So 95% and above, that's virtually, full.
That's a hotel that says they're full.
Yeah. So anyway, so we talked about regulation and how zoning can affect that. They did that in Portland, and they created a situation where people didn't even pull up any permits. The builders just would not build there because it did not pencil.
So, which makes sense.
Yeah. Where they're like, well, we need to include, pricing at this price point or for this income level. Well, we can build it like that, but if we come to code and every other regulation,
it green for you and all that stuff.
So other tools, they can have tax subsidies, which there are some programs for low-income housing. It's kind of a complicated thing, but there are some builders that specialize in that where they'll do a development.
Right.
A number of years ago, we looked at doing that downtown north of the bus mall, right down there. And would there be tax abatements, basically, so that the developer didn't have to pay the property tax, lowering his cost of building and expenses for a period of 5 or 10 years, and that helps it pencil out, right?
Makes sense.
So they can use tax tools. They can encourage things with fees, with zoning, with regulations, and with legislation. So I just don't think an artificial, hey, this is how much it needs to go up or down, or an artificial cap. How about if we just glut the market? Might be
balance out
or encourage people to make money. That's the bottom line. That's the part that's kind of missed in the whole economics 101 is if someone can't make money building a rental, they're not going to do it.
Right.
If there's too much risk, then they're going to do something else, right? They're going to build mini storage. They're going to build single-family housing. They're going to put it in the stock market. They're going to do something else. But there has to be a return for someone who's going to build multifamily, even if it's low income.
Any investment.
Any investment.
Yeah. And they have a reward.
And the flip side of the coin of that is the lenders have to see it's going to be profitable.
Right.
So
they want their money too.
The bank's going to look at the pro forma. They're going to look at the proposition and say, will there be cash flow? Will there be healthy enough cash flow to service the loan?
Mm-hmm.
Is it sustainable? Can it sustain a 20% drop and all these factors? So it's not just the greedy developer or the builder. they can't get it done without the financing.
There's a lot of factors in there.
So you have to be able to make money at a rental to pencil out and have it keep going. So no on rent. Well, we want to watch it closely. It's not the last time we'll talk about it while the legislature's in session. All right, we'll talk about some more local news coming up. Stick with us. Hey, you're listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is brought to you by Sylvan Learning Center.
And welcome back to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart here with Dave Bourne. We're talking about things happening in Salem and the surrounding area today. We're just talking about rent control, which we'll see that ball bandied about at the Capitol during this legislative session.
Like badminton.
Yeah. So we want to watch it carefully and make sure it doesn't spin out of control in a direction that does not favor and doesn't, you know, backfire into no affordable housing for anyone.
Right.
Right. So, we don't want rents to be out of control. On the other hand, we don't want too much legislation enacted by people who don't understand the market.
Yeah, because that causes slums.
Yeah.
It does.
And in Portland's case, a lack of anybody building in Portland. And then suddenly, oh, woe is me. Look at these terrible rents. These people are so greedy and blah, blah, blah.
And it's when they do build, parking.
You crushed the market.
Yeah.
All right. Let's shift the topic a little bit. The mayor did have a State of the City address yesterday. So I'm going to purposely avoid that.
Why?
Because we're going to have the mayor on, I think, next week.
Oh,
and
good.
We'll let then Mayor we can grill him then. Talk about that. Yeah. And he's actually a fairly optimistic guy. He lets us know when he's frustrated, but he's a fairly positive individual overall. So we'll let him recap that for us on the show next week. But there are things downtown we want to talk about. We talked about it recently, the homeless camp under the bridge, under the Marion Street Bridge.
I went by there yesterday.
It was cleared out.
Yep, cleared out.
And the barriers remain, and no trespassing has been stenciled. And so
stenciled?
Forth.
Yeah, painted on.
So that's cleaner. I saw somebody post something on Facebook that said, and had a picture of it.
Yeah.
And the aftermath of when people clearing out, it's just, I'd hate to be the city employee that has to clean this up.
It was disgusting.
It was horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, a problem that we do not have a solution for, and I'm not going to pretend to tell you that I do, other than I think we are getting to the place where everybody acknowledges that it has to be a combined effort of a lot of different
sectors. UGM said, that, you know, they've got mechanisms in place to help, but they you just said, everyone needs to help.
I think we had the police chief on it. I think it was the chief. It said, you know, some of the people there are people who refuse to come inside.
Yeah.
And they're the which hardest
makes it
to
tough.
House.
Yeah.
They're the hardest to house and find a solution for. Anyway, but downtown, some great things. I keep saying great things are coming. But if you can visualize downtown Salem, there's a corner. We call it the old McMahon site. And McMahon's burned. And then the building was raised. And it's across from Pioneer Trust Bank and the Ladin Bush building of U.S. Bank, which has to be one of the most spectacular looking buildings around. It's beautiful. It's right down in downtown. It's part of the historic district by Scott's Bike Shop. And there's proposals there to build apartments, units, I think. Let me see here. Where's my notes? Oh, it's like 140 units or something. 148 units at Commercial and State. That'd be incredible. But there's some criticism and there's some consternation over, are these low-impact housing units where people do not have cars and they're using public transit and bikes and so forth, or they're doing car share or things like that?
Oh, okay.
And will there be adequate parking, or
that
is that
the problem?
Delusional? Is it delusional and people are going to end up having a car anyway and trying to park it downtown?
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's exciting.
Yeah.
I mean, there's that one block, and we talked when we had United Gospel gentlemen in on that block, and that is Commercial and Center, and the entire block hopefully will be consolidated into one parcel by the Urban Renewal Agency and then put up for redevelopment.
That's good.
That is incredible. Also across the street it's a block from the mall and a block from the river. So great location.
That is pretty
incredible.
Good, yeah.
Potential. We've got housing units going up at Front and Chemeketa, I believe that is, and I might have that wrong. court. Anyway, under construction, getting darn close. So very, very exciting what's happening downtown and the potential of what could be with adequate leadership from the city and Urban Renewal District. And it's not talked about very much. We mentioned it when we had Kurt Arthur from SVN Commercial Real Estate Advisors on. The Statesman Journal's old building, that entire block is up for redevelopment. I've seen proposals thrown out there of a number of different things that it could be, including an open-air market. And, I mean, really incredible things that can happen in downtown Salem as far as quality of life, as far as getting people to stop thinking that they need to commute from Beaverton and Lake Oswego and Portland and Tigard and all that stuff and burning those fossil fuels to come down and work in Salem, leave no money here, and go home.
Right.
So
there should be a regulation that if you build an apartment complex in a high density place like downtown, that you build it with parking.
There's land use restrictions that tells you how many parking spaces you need to have.
Well,
and then
there's one here for a condo downtown that says one of the amenities is one off street parking spot.
Yeah. One is good.
One.
If you can get one in a downtown, that's
good.
Wow.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you won't get two. Not in a downtown condo. There are opportunities. And I wasn't planning on talking about this, but since you brought it up, Dave.
Okay.
So one of the things that complicates downtown development, especially when it comes to housing, is parking. And the parking issue is related to the fact that parking is free downtown. Okay, so then it gets people's up in arms and the hair grows in the back of their neck about charge for parking, and that's going to destroy downtown. And so we have, it's incredible. We have four parking garages downtown owned by the city, and they're free. They're free.
Find
another city this size.
Good luck with that.
And it's free parking on the street. There's no meters.
There are signs.
The vast majority of them. There's signs. So the signs are designed to prevent employees from parking all day on street sites
sure.
that should be dedicated to shoppers.
Yeah.
Right.
Visitors. Like 3-hour limit.
Right. So people who work downtown, say you work at Kohl's or Penny's, they don't want you driving downtown, taking up a parking space that would be taken by a shopper.
Shopper, sure.
And so that's why we don't want the street full with people parking all day during their 8-hour shift, right? So that's what that's related to.
But they can park in the garage. All day.
They can park in the garage.
All day.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think so. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because it's free.
So there's capacity to increase parking downtown as Salem downtown grows and becomes more dense and has more people and has more people with cars downtown. You can park, you can go vertically from the lot that is on State Street. It's hard to picture. It's because it's a surface lot, but you could go up. It's on State, just east of Liberty, and there by Willamette Valley Bank.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, you can go vertical. There's no reason why you couldn't do a 3-4 level parking garage.
Right.
And it's also there along what we would call Restaurant Row.
Yeah.
And it's also there by the theaters, both the Grand Theater and the Elsinore Theater. So there's a spot where, if done right, incentivized either public or private dollars, you could create more parking. Same thing, and this was talked about a number of years ago next to Spaghetti Warehouse, Old Chicago.
They need a
surface lot, and it's all dedicated, and it could go vertical as well.
Problem. How many stories?
I don't know.
10 would be good.
10? That'd be good and expensive.
I'm just saying.
And I'm, you know, you have to reach back, and I'm trying to remember that the parking lots at the time, this is over 10 years ago, they're talking about like maybe it's $40,000 a spot to build these things.
What?
Yeah. And so to get that money
back, I could do it cheaper.
You have to be able to charge for parking.
Yeah,
that's the rub. And that prevents some of the parking infrastructure growing, because who's going to pay for it and maintain it and get no revenue?
Well, how's the city do it then?
It's problematic. With tax dollars.
So you and I are paying for it.
Actually, the downtown businesses and downtown land.
They're
self-taxing and so forth.
All
right. Anyway, totally off the subject. But downtown, there's so much exciting potential with opportunities to live downtown, have a small city flavor and a beautiful riverfront, and that, but an urban, walkable environment.
It is beautiful.
Yeah. So
I would have to agree with that.
I think the future is outstanding. So it's a good time for, I think, people to make money developing downtown and redeveloping downtown. Now, also up in conversation is redoing the streetscape, the sidewalks and such downtown. There's proposals to do that, and they're discussing whether or not they should put the infrastructure in to put in, they're talking about a conduit for, say, fiber optics to have internet speeds and so forth. So we've talked about this just briefly, that Independence Monmouth formed a co-op, MyNet, and they put fiber optic cable to virtually every address in Monmouth and Independence. Both towns are about 10,000 people.
Nice.
So screaming fast internet, so fast out there in these small towns. And they did a cooperative and put this in. So when the sidewalks get dug up, there's going to be an opportunity to lay some conduit. And so they could potentially
wire it.
And should they do it as a municipality, or should they lease that under the sidewalk infrastructure for a private company to offer it?
Isn't there a conduit already there?
This would be new conduit for new service with fiber optic. And I didn't see it in the articles I've read, but there's such a thing as black. What's it called?
I don't know.
Black cable, black wire. Someone's going to call us and go, "You imbecile, it's called this." Okay. But it has to do with super, super fast, you know, internet speed. So at any rate, it's a great proposal, and it would be great to have that kind of speed and that kind of technology.
But do the sidewalks need to be redone?
They do.
Okay.
Yeah, they did a while back.
Yeah.
They were not done with the right materials, the pavers, they call them. Which is a whole other story. Another day. All right. Hey, stay with us. We got a few other things happening, talking about the bridge and some fees and Congress and the St. Edward's Church in Kaiser. You're listening to Newsmakers on KYKN 1430. Salem is listening.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome back. This is Brent DeHart. And while we were on break, Dave got a call from Jim, who wants to weigh in. We were talking about the parking situation downtown. Jim's going to have some clarifications and comments for us. How are you doing, Jim? Excellent.
Yeah, I was just making comment that I operate a ministry downtown, Salem House of Prayer, and we love our city, and we obey all the rules and all that. But the parking situation, to our understanding, is a little more extreme than what you're describing. We have been told and received tickets for parking. They say that it covers three classifications: employees, employers or employees, and volunteers, and students. Those are the three classifications. So people who work, people who volunteer, or people who are students all have the same restriction upon them, that they're not able to park in the three-hour spots or even in the parking lots that are owned by the City of Salem, or they'll be ticketed. They are compelled to either park in free spots on the outlying areas of the downtown core, or else to purchase permits for the parking structures. So it's a fairly restrictive, and we've had people get tickets for all of the above. I've had volunteers come into our place, you know, once a week to sweep the floor and get a ticket because they were considered a volunteer.
Now, Jim, I was asking you on the phone too. How do the ticket people know that you are a volunteer or a student, unless it's on your car?
Well, first of all, they want you to volunteer that information to the city so they know. But even if they don't, of course, they're keeping track of the license plate numbers and so on. So if they see something that is repetitive, then they begin to check that out and verify that. We have had recently an individual that came out of our cafe who was volunteering in the cafe, not an employee, just volunteering. And because they saw them behind the counter and walk out of the building, they assumed they were an employee and gave them a ticket.
Oh, man.
Now, when they went to the court, they dismissed half of it. And rather than dismissing the whole thing, because it was not completely illegitimate, they were a volunteer. But they hadn't had the opportunity, or this particular person didn't even know they needed to make that known.
Jim, do you know?
So, And I personally have gotten a ticket at one of the parking structures for being the director of you know, so I guess I would fall under the category of an employer, even though all of our guys are volunteers, you know, for parking in a parking structure rather than having a parking permit.
Jim, do you know what the going... Jim, sorry to interrupt. Do you know what the going rate is to rent a spot in one of the parking garages? A monthly rate?
It goes anywhere, and it's not just the parking structures. There's a couple other places you can. There's a paid parking down at the park, and there's a variety of places. But I think the lowest we've seen is right around 50, and then it goes up to as high as 85, 90, even $100. So it varies depending on where you go.
Yeah, I was going to guess about
$80. It's pretty unreasonable to ask a student or a volunteer who might come in once a week or even once a month to pay $50 a month just to be able to park downtown. And frankly, if you're one of those people that comes under those three categories, you can get a ticket for parking somewhere else downtown that isn't even associated with a place that you're employed at. So it's a little over the top, in my opinion.
It's a little messy. All right, Jim, we're going to make you parking czar for the city of Salem.
No, please
and
don't do that.
let's just pretend. What would you see as the best solution? How would we solve this to make best use of the resource?
That's a really good question. We've talked a lot about it and thought a lot about it. You know, again, we want to honor it. I understand the principle behind it is we're it's a give and take thing. We're giving some free parking in order to draw people, you know, consumers into the core and, you know, boost economy. That's a wonderful thing. I really personally don't have anything, any problem with the employer-employee restriction, only because those people are earning an income to come downtown, and a part of their income can go to buying a permit. And I think that's reasonable to do in exchange for having open parking, you know, three-hour open parking spot. I think that's a relatively wise thing to do. What I do think is over the top and extreme is asking people who are not getting any kind of income. It kind of seems like penalizing them for being a volunteer or a student to have to purchase a ticket. So I think if you remove those two things, again, most of those guys are not going to be there every day. They're not like an employee who's there 8 hours a day consuming parking spots. They're off and on again. And
they're like a consumer.
So I don't think they should be in that category.
Yeah, they're like a consumer coming down to spend money rather than, you know, make money down there and take up a parking spot.
Yeah, and really they're helping those businesses
sure.
or those ministries or whatever they are to flourish because they're actually volunteering their time and making it easier for them to stay open and keep their costs down and so on and so on. So it's I think it's kind of punishing them. That would be the only thing really that I would change about it.
Well, thank you for your call. I think that this conversation is going to explode as Salem grows. Now,
yeah.
Downtown Salem, if it's going to explode like it looks like it's going to explode, it's going to have to be part of the conversation, and we're going to have to start to marginalize people who are anti-car, you must not have a car, period.
We'll have to ask the mayor about that.
Don't build parking spaces because people shouldn't have cars.
Right.
Now, those people, that's just not rational.
That is not.
Right? I'll be happy to negotiate and compromise, but people who are not rational, oh, no, people shouldn't drive cars because we're all going to die.
How did you get to work?
Yeah. Anyway.
Thanks, Jim.
It's going to be, yeah, thank you very much, Jim, for the call and for the ministry downtown. I appreciate it and your insight. But there's going to have to be some changes that people mm-hmm. are not going to like. People don't like changes. And when you do assign a cost to the parking, you create an ability for us to create the infrastructure so that there is a place to park.
Right.
But anyway, those units, I think it's a positive thing. And those other sites we're talking about downtown, potentially multi-use or shopping or office and retail or in residential and a combination of those things is very exciting. And fiber optics downtown.
They
actually,
need it.
Back in 2000 and, I don't know, six? A long time ago, I floated a proposal to do a Wi-Fi cloud over downtown as part of Central Business District kind of an amenity.
Forward thinking on your part.
Yeah, at the time, we still had internet cafes, right?
Right.
And people didn't have as much, they didn't have 4G on their phone, and they didn't have free Wi-Fi and everywhere you went. But, you know, way back when, we were thinking about in terms of infrastructure for internet downtown. So if we're going to have a vibrant central business district is what it is, then people need to start realizing that it's not just a itty-bitty town. We live in a mid-sized town with a central business district.
It's the capital city.
And we want it to thrive. I think the fiber optics idea is a great idea.
It is.
So somebody will call us up and tell us what black cable, black wire is. But it's beyond my...
Analog.
Yeah.
It's what it is.
Is it? No.
It is. It's high fiber. Fiber optics is high speed.
That's the highest.
Yeah. All right. And the black cable is kind of limited, but...
All right, before we go to break, we want to touch on one of our favorite subjects because at the end of the month, it will be the... the city council will have the work session on the bridge.
Oh, boy.
Right. So that'll be a work session. It won't be public testimony. Public is welcome, of course, but I don't think they'll be taking a public testimony.
Well,
they'll
what's
be
a work
learning.
Session?
Work session is when they get educated. It'll be staff will be presenting, you know, the history, you know, if this, then that, if this, then that. And they'll be able to ask questions of staff. It's a work session. Because
you've got
to keep
that
in mind, because city councilors are volunteers. And this
right.
happens at the legislature as well. And it happens at the U.S. legislature as well. What they don't know Middle Eastern foreign policy, right?
True.
So they have to get an education. And sometimes they get an education from lobbyists and special interests. Sometimes they'll get it from nonprofits and whatever. So for these citizen elected leaders in Salem, they've asked to get an education. And so hopefully they'll learn that this is a process involved all of these entities. And this is what we went through. And these are the considerations that went through. And this is when option 47 got taken off the list and why. And this is when it up. And this is what happens with this decision. This is what happens with this decision, this decision.
Okay.
And so, you know, and hopefully it's an opportunity for them to say, I'm not for this bridge. I really didn't like it coming in. However, given the situation we're in and what the options are coming out if we do nothing, we're going to have to do it. And at least put us in a position as a placeholder so we don't have to do this entire process over again.
Yeah, that would be a waste of a lot of time, money, and effort by a lot of people.
And a whole generation.
And
quality of life. So there's we got a message, don'tkillthebridge.com.
Yeah.
It's a new website. You want to check that out, don'tkillthebridge.com. And check that out. Add your voice to it.
They have a survey on
Salem there. Bridge Partnership, Salem Bridge Builders,
something
Salem
like
Bridge...
That.
We had on the show last month. But please go on the website, learn what's going on, and add your name to the voice because at nearly 8 out of 10 Salem citizens, including people who live on the east side, thinking that we should do this, we can't let a tiny minority prevent it.
Right.
So don'tkillthebridge.com. There will be a vote on what to do and if they're going to answer to the state government's, you know, a few questions that they have remaining on the process.
They had like three, didn't they?
Yeah, like three process questions that they need to answer. And if they don't, then the whole thing dies. And if they do, nothing happens, honestly. That's the thing. If they just answer the questions, they can still stay in authority and in power in the city council seats and make decisions as it goes, as far as how many lanes, how many dollars, how does it get funded, what does it look like, what is, you know, all of these things have yet to be decided. But we have nothing, and all gets thrown down the toilet.
So the city council is overseeing it because it's in the city limits, but the state really should be doing it.
Oh, and that's just the thing. It's, you know, it is the state, ODOT, of course.
Right,
Was ODOT. Heavily involved.
They should be doing it
with,
anyway.
With U.S. Department of Transportation. So you
Federal.
Got the U.S. Department and Marion County and Polk County and Kaiser and Salem-Kaiser Transit. We're all at the table and worked this through over a 12-year period of time. All of them.
Yeah.
And now it's...
You know, down to the city council?
It's not what I would have done. Yeah, and they're going to kill all that work. All right. We got one more segment coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's down to city council because the bridge...
is in the
jump
city
off
limits.
And it's going to be city limits. And some people are just going, well, move it to Kaiser. it's a little harder to make the connections, you know, but...
Sure.
I know. We'll just give Kaiser part of Salem. Well, yeah, we'll just come from the Parkway North and
right?
let them do it.
Yeah.
I said that as a ridiculous thought, but we should flesh that out.
Wait. Take the Salem Parkway, right?
Yeah.
And before it turns left to go downtown, build a...
We have it solved.
Build an expressway right there that goes straight across.
Dave has it solved.
And then then it turns left and goes to 22. That would do it, right?
Speaking of Kaiser.
You have to move a few people, but...
We'll touch on St. Edward's and what their legal pitch is to not lose their parking lot to the school district after the break. You're listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Much thanks to our sponsors of Newsmakers. Welcome back to Brent and Dave. We're following up kind of on subjects that we've talked about, right?
Amazing how it circles back. We've had a lot of these guests on talking about these topics, and they continue to come up. We mentioned before the break, St. Edward's Church, of course.
Yes.
There's a battle with the school district. I wish we'd have to say battle, but really, they have land, and the school district wants the land, and the school district thinks they're being fair in how much they're offering for the land, and St. Edward says, no, we have plans for the land. We do not want to sell, which... moves it towards taking it under eminent domain, which we know happened in West Salem as well a while back. Anyway, so St. Edward's in the news. And by the way, I wanted to give a shout out to Salem Reporter. I love the Salem Reporter.
Yeah,
so
very good.
We had Les Seitz on. He's a publisher, and they're also a website partner of KYKN. And you can see some of their news feed and click on some of these stories that we're talking about. You know, I grab a lot of headlines and read through the Salem Reporter. They do good investigative reporting.
Yeah.
And not so much, you know, you don't see schlock at Salem Reporter.
No.
So SalemReporter.com, I think it is. Anyway, shout out to them. They're not a sponsor, but they are a website partner, and they do good stuff. So another thing about the website, I always forget to say, but if you've missed a show and you said, hey, I want to hear the show, the last show the mayor was on, or I want to hear the last show when Commissioner Cameron was on, then they're available on the KYKN website on podcast to record each show and put it on there so you can listen or to... share it with somebody else if you heard it and thought it was a good show and somebody should be aware.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We were talking about downtown. We were talking about St. Edward's Church. We're not going to have time to dive deeply into this, but there is a study that was recently released. It's in the news now about how much the state employees' package is worth when it comes to their health care.
And what's that number?
And how does it compare to... other states, California, other states in the West, California, Washington, Idaho, Nevada, and it's part of the effort to try to get under control the escalating costs of employees, public employees.
Right.
Because we already know there's a purse issue. So we already know it's an extraordinary percentage of what cities and school districts and transit districts have to pay. Well, actually, our transit district is not a PERS affiliate, but what they have to pay per $100 of payroll is very expensive, and it really drives up the cost of having public employees. And the other piece of that is increased health care.
Mm-hmm.
That is true of the public and the private sector. And then under the negotiations, when you're doing collective bargaining with public employee unions, how much does the public employee have to pick up? That's the issue. How much of the health care cost and the health insurance cost does employee pick up? So it's a great article. I recommend people hit it. We're obviously not going to chant a bunch of statistics for you on the radio. However, it's going to be one of those negotiating points when the state feels it has this huge shortfall and how are we going to close the gap.
Right.
And this is going to be an issue. And the concern, of course, Brent talking, and I have great concerns when we have a supermajority of Democrats that all got elected with the aid of money and organizational efforts from public employee unions.
Right.
So I'm really struggling on how that's not a conflict of interest.
Sounds like it.
So if you take money from a developer, you have to, like on city council, you take more than $499 and you have to declare a conflict of interest and this and that. But you can take a huge check and you can take, you know, in-kind contributions and organization and so forth from public employee unions and you're going to be involved in the public employee union contract negotiation. And I don't understand how that's not a conflict.
That's a big conflict for me.
It should be recusal.
Yeah. Right?
Anyway, it's good. And it looks like, you know, California's the closest, but Oregon is getting the richest benefits is what it comes down to.
Really?
In terms of the employees are paying the fewest, the smallest amount of its actuarial value. The AV, because everything has to have an acronym. So it's very complicated math, I'm sure, but there's an actuarial value of the benefit in terms of what are your co-pays, what's your max out of pocket, and blah, blah, blah. And somebody who got an advanced degree in math gets to crunch all that into an actuarial value, and that's what they're comparing to try to get some sort of apples-to-apples comparison. So that would be an argument when they go to the table next time for negotiations that we want the public employee unions or you know the legislatures or the employers. We want you to pick up more of the actuarial value of your benefits.
So, right.
I know that,
do you know what the average salary is?
Oh, no. I mean, it's all over the board. You're talking people that maintain the floors in the Capitol, and you're talking about people with PhDs, and it's all over the board. You know, you're talking about doctors and instructors at OHSU, and just a lot of people fall in the umbrella of PERS.
Okay.
I mean, of state employee union.
Yeah, right.
So everything that we touch, that the government touches, that and it's all over the board, and they're represented by you know different unions or the non-represented. But that negotiation for healthcare costs, again, I mean, even if it's a one-party legislature, they're going to have to balance a budget.
Mm-hmm.
So leadership from the governor and coming to the table and negotiating and just not finding, well, let's just raise taxes again.
No.
Right? Let's just find another way to raise taxes.
Yeah, and right.
We had Senator Winters on that said that the governor's budget relied on $800 million, $2 billion new dollars.
I think it was $2 billion new dollars. Yeah.
So that's incredible.
Even though we have a record amount of taxes coming in.
So on a light note, because we're going to run out of time here, we may have to
so
jump
heavy,
into that next week.
You're bringing me down, Brent.
I know. Did I tell you I'm going to go see Bob Seger?
I need therapy now.
I'm going to go see Bob Seger.
Yeah,
February 2nd. It's a rebook. It's up in Portland. I've got to drive to Portland.
I've never seen him. I'd love to see him.
He's 72
need
years
to go
old.
With you?
She's a lot cuter than you, Dave.
Damn.
So I've got a good story about getting Bob Seger tickets, too, and how ridiculous StubHub can be. When it comes to their fees and what have you. We're going to do a segment next week.
How they're making money, buddy.
Next week, we're going to do a segment on voting with your pocketbook. And when customer service is not right, when the fees are too high, when the person who's selling you something wants to dictate what you buy and how you buy it, sometimes you just need to walk away as a consumer. So we'll talk about that. I don't want to give too much away. But I missed Elton John last week. I heard it was fabulous, incredible old man that went for 3 hours without taking a break. He took a break long enough to change his outfit,
yes,
but never left this 3 hours. The guy's, I saw 71 years
yeah,
old?
I saw him one time. It was 3.5 hours. And he only took a 5-minute break to change clothes. Yeah.
Right.
That was a phenomenal one. Wow. And I was 5 rows from the front.
So I don't
benefits
care.
Of working at a radio station.
I don't care how old Bob Seger is. I am looking forward to seeing him.
Bob
That'll be a, even if I do have to drive to Portland. Let me tell you, I don't like to leave the Mid Valley for anything. So.
All right, we'll wrap it up.
All right, we'll see you guys tomorrow. We have another guest tomorrow. It'll be Friday. We're getting near the end of the week and another exciting week. And I'm so excited to have the new CEO of the Chamber of Commerce book coming up. You listen to 1430 KYKN, Salem's Listening.
See you tomorrow.
This has been Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.